International Diplomatic Student Association is Hungary-based student organization for university students interested in political science, multilateral treaties, and intergovernmental relations. IDSA podcast aims to educate its listeners on career opportunities to university students in Hungary, opening their minds to pressing social and geopolitical issues. The podcast is recorded with the support of EPR Radio.
Welcome everyone to the third edition of the IDSA podcast. Today we have a really special guest, Dr. Pacsay Tomasis Orsolya, who is the State Secretary for the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy and the Stipendium Hungaricum Scholarship Program in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. She is also responsible for a brand new initiative, the Hungarian Diaspora Scholarship. Today, after asking career-related questions, we will have a discussion about these three programs in this edition. Let me quickly introduce ourselves as well. My co-interviewer is Cseperke Szilágyi, and my name is Réka Bogár. We are both members of the professional team in IDSA. Cseperke is a first year, and I'm a final year international relations student at Corvinus University. Before we begin with the questions, we would like to mention that our student organization thinks of these programs as unique opportunities to preserve and promote Hungarian traditions in the 21st century. Therefore, we are really honored that the State Secretary is here with us, and we would like to thank her for accepting our invitation. So, let's begin with the questions. State Secretary, I can frankly say that you are a great role model for Hungarian students engaged in international relations and public service. Could you give us a look into your daily activities? How does a day of a State Secretary look like?
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank both of you for inviting me today. The pleasure is mine to be here, and I'm very happy that I'm in good company. I was also a Corvinus student, international relations. So my day, well, I wake up early with my kids. I have three young kids, so the day starts with starting them, preparing them, feeding them, and sending them off to school if there's contact education, now getting them ready for online education and trying to explain to them every morning that online education means that they have to take part in a class and not watch YouTube videos. So that's where we start. And then I get dressed and then I go into my office where I have meetings, which are limited right now due to the pandemic situation. And normally we have events, quite a few also, which fills the day. And that, again, has to wait now until the pandemic is over. And I read my reports. I write if that's necessary, meet with all kinds of people, have internal meetings, and just I'm ready for a colorful day every morning.
Thank you. Our next question is the following. Have you always preferred to pursue a career in public service? Was there an internship or a particular moment that determined your choice?
Well, I wanted to be a doctor when I was small. I think it stems from the fact that I wanted to serve and I wanted to help others. For different reasons, my interest then was drawn to international relations later on, which basically means that I don't want to talk about my physics teacher or biology teacher, because at that time, those were the requirements for getting into medical school. And, you know, teacher can basically guide you one way or the other in terms of preparing you for a future career. So I think my love of service towards others stayed, but just went to a little bit higher level, because what I'm doing now is also a service, but I'm serving the nation, which is obviously a sum of individuals compared to a doctor, which helps individuals. But I'm very lucky to work in the area of education, which then comes back to serving students. And that's, again, serving individual needs. That's what I got back as feedbacks from happy students. But your question was also related to a particular moment that determined my choice, other than the fact that I was interested in international relations. As I read about you and your organization, I believe that you are stemming from the UN model organization that was established in 1997. I think I was part of your first game at Corvinus, which was organized in 1997, and I was part of the Hungarian delegation. I was very happy to be part of it, and I became the head of delegation. I took it very seriously, obviously, and I had to collect material from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs at that time. It was a young gentleman giving me ammunition to get ready for the big debates and discussions in this World UN model game. And I, as I said, I took it seriously. I learned a lot. And I think we did very well as the Hungarian delegation. After the model game ended, young gentleman from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs signaled to me that his boss wants to have a talk with me. So basically that was, without my knowledge, my first career interview, which lasted quite a long time. Left my palms sweating, and as a matter of fact, my whole body. And then I came out, and then I got a phone call not many days afterwards that I basically have a job offer in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. But I did have to go through the examinations for entry, and obviously I had to get my diploma because that was in my last year of international relations studies. So I had my diploma in my hands. I went through the written and oral examinations required to become eligible for working in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And then the head of department of the UN department at that time basically secured the status for me. So I got out of university and I started working right away in September.
Thank you. It seems that you made the right choice becoming an international relations expert rather than a doctor, because you have an outstanding career. Mm-hmm. And as IDSA members, we are really happy that you mentioned Model United Nations, because that's still part of our passion. So you are responsible for three exceptional programs, namely Stipendium Hungaricum, the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy, and the soon-to-be-launched Hungarian Diaspora Scholarship. What gives you the most joy when managing these programs?
When you were asking the questions, I thought you were referring to my three exceptional kids, but I do consider them kids also. So I could have said I have six kids, three of my own and three of these, but I have so many others. And the kids that are here within the umbrella of the Stipendium Hungaricum is at the moment more than 11,000. So I'm a mother of many, I must say, and I'm a proud mother of many. You are asking me what gives me the most joy. I think it's the fact for all of these programs that for the Diplomatic Academy that I could do something from scratch. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for a leader to be given with the mandate of the leader of the country to establish an institution, which was absolutely lacking. So we did not never had a state-organized Diplomatic Academy in Hungary. So it's a great responsibility, but a great opportunity. And it's something where I can leave a legacy. So that is extremely interesting for me. Also, being creative. This position gives me the opportunity to be creative. So that's wonderful. And the fact that I'm dealing with students is a very interesting phenomenon in diplomacy, because most of the time in diplomacy, other than reaping the benefits of short-term results, it's mostly an investment in middle or long-term wise. But the same applies for education. You invest in the education of children, that serves their future. But when I have these students here in Hungary and they take part in bachelor's, master's, doctorate programs, they come to Hungary, they study here for a couple of years, and that basically changes their lives. And when I talk to them, I see that kind of impact. I have a direct feedback from them, as I mentioned at the beginning, and I see the direct impact on their life. And that is just fascinating, and that it gives me so much motivation for my work to see that we can really make a change for the better. And this is an exceptional government program.
We are also happy to see that Hungarian customs and values are getting more and more advertised with the help of these programs. Is this also your personal mission?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think that it's very honoring to work for a government that has programs like this one, for example, or ideas, aspirations that one can associate with. And I think it's a very fulfilling mission to be able to give information about a country which is so exceptional as Hungary and spread information all around the world about its educational system, and through that, about Hungary itself. So to make sure that more and more people, young people and not so young people, get to know about Hungary with its wonderful traditions, its wonderful cultural heritage, and obviously with the people that come here with the friendly mentality that we have, and obviously the exquisite Hungarian cuisine and wines and spirits. I think that I'm a very happy Hungarian, and I'm very proud Hungarian, and I'm very happy that I can do this mission.
Thank you. Personally, I feel exactly the same being a Hungarian folk dancer for 20 years now. So I feel how it is important to promote traditions all around our group.
I've only done folk dancing for about 5-6 years, but I think I remain a folk dancer within, so I can associate with you, Reka.
Thank you. Let's talk about the programs individually. The Hungarian Diplomatic Academy, which launched last year, exceeded all expectations. More than 500 students applied. What is the secret ingredient which makes the academy so popular?
You're asking me about the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy. So that is an institution which has multiple reasons, but one of the main ideas of that being set up is to ensure the recruitment of the foreign service. So I think the fact that without even being launched or just being launched and everything being online, we almost had 600 applications for 25 places. I cannot, unfortunately, say that it is the result of our work. That will be hopefully later on when we'll have more applicants. But I think it's just a mere and pure fact that young kids are interested in foreign policy. They're interested in serving their nation, serving Hungary's national interest abroad. And just in general, they think it's an exciting mission to become a diplomat and work tirelessly for a country.
And after 7 months, what is your overall impression of the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy?
I think we have been quite successful, and that is very objective view, because the numbers are showing that we have a high number of people interested in our programs. We have launched 4 different kind of programs that are up and running. And I say, despite the fact that most of our courses have been online, we had some contact education this summer when we had no restrictions and quarantine. We started with educating or getting the heads of missions, the ambassadors, ready for their foreign assignment. The new practice is that the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy trains the newly appointed heads of missions, ambassadors or consul generals who go to their foreign posting. They have to go through a 4-week training session. According to their feedback, it was very helpful and interesting for them, with a real added value. We have started in September with the diplomatic training program. That is the recruitment program that will ensure that we will have new ambitious, young, talented diplomats joining the ministry each year. The third program is for leaders in the public service that deal with foreign policy. It's kind of a mid-career program. And the fourth one is a brand new idea that we have launched. It's unique, not only in Hungary, but in the region also. It's called Corporate Diplomacy Program. That is something which we do for the private sector, for firms and companies, because we believe that the comparative advantage of the knowledge that we have in diplomacy, regional knowledge, how to negotiate in certain countries, what is the protocol of the etiquette, what are the legal or national standards of setting up businesses in foreign countries, things like that. They might be very interesting for firms that want to pursue business outside the country. We have worked out the curriculum of the program with the big companies that were on board from the beginning on. And it just seems to be, again, an extremely exciting program. We have just started with it, and we already have interest from small and middle-sized entrepreneurs also. So I'm glad to say that it's been successful.
Yeah, thank you for this detailed answer. And we are also really happy that the Diplomatic Academy is so successful. So you have mentioned that there are numerous ambitious students who would like to serve their own country. Would you like to share your personal opinion? What skills and qualities should a person have who is interested in pursuing a career in diplomacy?
Well, we had diplomats or mediators from the very early ages of civilization, countries or interactors in international level always needed people who will mediate, people who will guarantee peace, or people who will do conflict resolution or crisis management. When modern diplomacy was set up in the 16th and 17th century, it was considered that one has to be wealthy, well-educated, with the knowledge of many languages, and has to be handsome, good-looking. Obviously, things have changed. Many requirements don't have to be matched these days. Being handsome and good-looking is not a disadvantage, obviously. But wealth, for example, or things that were important for many reasons in the earlier decades are not the prerequisites of becoming a diplomat. If you ask me, what is a good diplomat? I think a good diplomat is someone who can send you to hell with you waiting to go. But that's something obviously that many people are familiar with. I think a good diplomat can create a win-win situation, which is good for the partner and good for the diplomat itself, but will manage the situation always that he or she will come out as a winner more than the other one. So I think that a diplomat has to be well-cultured, knowledgeable, and has to have all kinds of different skills. Those are very important, skills of negotiation, of conflict management, of persuasion, good presentation, empathy, patience, for example. But above all, a good diplomat has to have interest in international relations and open, he or she has to be open to foreign affairs, has to be a good mediator. And I could go on with all kinds of skills that can be learned in our academy.
Thank you. And so the next question is about Stipendium Hungaricum. So it's a scholarship launched by the Hungarian government with the aim of internationalizing the Hungarian higher education. And so how did this program come into being?
This program was launched in 2013 within the government's Eastern Opening Policy. And I have to underline that this is a program which is government-funded. It is not an EU-funded program. We don't get any kind of financial support for anywhere else. This is heavy Hungarian taxpayers' money that we give as an investment in the future of, as you have said, Hungarian higher education, also letting the world know about Hungary, which later on, with the contacts of the personal contacts, can serve as a prerequisite for bettering the conditions of Hungarian firms stepping to outside markets or drawing in foreign direct investment. But it's, I think I need to emphasize that it's also very important, and the government has decided to strengthen its commitment towards a stipendium program in the last couple of years, because it also goes along with our migration policy, which means that we help on the spot. When we invest in these kids, most of them coming from third world countries, we invest in the development of the country. They come to Hungary, they study whatever is most important for them, then they go back to their countries and they help build their own country. So it can be more flourishing, develop better, and then have better bilateral relations with Hungary. So it is absolutely a long-term investment for the Hungarian people. And if you break it down, because I was talking about Hungary's budget or Hungary's taxpayers' budget, if you break it down to financial aspects, which I honestly really don't like to, because that's not the main idea behind it. But if we want to be practical, we have to see that the money that is left in Hungary after the program is actually, in terms of numbers, more than what we give. Because the money that we dedicate for this program or the financial resources, they go to the Hungarian universities or they go to the students that actually spend the money here in Hungary. And they spend over, I don't want to burden you with numbers, but they spend a lot of money in Hungary for services, for lodging, for inviting their families and friends. So when you add up these numbers, they total to actually more than what the taxpayers pay for this long-term investment.
I see. Thank you. And so this program is available in 5 continents in approximately 70 countries. And what are the biggest challenges you have faced when bringing all these students from all around the world?
We have currently 76 countries involved. We have about 20-something in the channel that we already have an agreement with. We just have to make sure that the technicalities are done, so the MOUs are signed. Those are the preconditions for the program to work. During the COVID pandemic, to issue visas, for example, or to make sure that that they can come into Hungary smoothly, that's a challenge, I must say, if that was what you were referring to. When we're trying to overcome it with the wonderful foreign missions that are helping everybody to have a smooth transition and to come into Hungary, obviously, where the restrictions allow it in the different countries. But I have to tell you that most of the students could come in last year, and we have an overwhelming 50,000 applications this year for 5,000 places. So the pandemic doesn't seem to stop the enthusiasm of these students wanting to come to Hungary and study here.
And are there any further difficulties imposed by the COVID situation?
For the students that are here?
Yes.
Well, you know, if you go to a different country, a foreign country, and you're away from your families and friends, then obviously you might feel alone. So it is very important for us to guarantee that that the students who are here, they feel comfortable, because that's what gives them a good environment to study. That's what I guarantee. I try to guarantee for my children that they feel comfortable, they're fed well, they have enough programs, and then they will be happy and they will be more inclined to study and to study well. So I think the most important is that we have to provide the conditions for them that they can focus on their studies, because they're excellent students, all of them. This is an excellence program, I have to emphasize it. So you have to go through high standards to get into the Hungarian universities with an exceptional English knowledge or Hungarian knowledge. That's also an option. But we have to make sure from the government side, and that includes my state secretariat, all the people that work very enthusiastically for this program, also the Tempus Foundation, which technically deals with the issues, that all of these students have every comfort possible that they can focus on their studies. And then we work together with the Hungarian National Students Union. We provide mentor programs for them. So we like to take their hands and make sure that they feel well in Hungary other than a focus on their studies. We organize all kinds of wonderful programs for them that will build cohesion, not only within themselves, but with the Hungarian students. It is very important. Obviously, if you're talking about hardships, yes, it is very difficult for them now that they have to sit within four walls, but we have to face it as the whole country. So we're in this together. We have to take care of each other and hope and pray that the situation will get better soon. Everybody will be vaccinated, and then we can go back to contact education, to organizing fun programs that will lift our spirits.
Yes, but it seems that these students get everything they need in order to feel at home here in Hungary. So the next question is about the negotiation process. So both the Stipendium Hungaricum program and the Hungarian Diplomatic Academy have established strong relations with foreign countries. For example, in Stipendium alone, there are 70 sending countries, for example, countries in Africa or South America, and more than 11,000 students currently studying in Hungary. How does the negotiation process with possible partners start?
It's always a political decision to draw somebody in. So the idea is born in the highest levels. And once that is done, then what we do is we make sure that we provide the administrative background and the legal background for that, which is, first of all, a contract between the states, so an intergovernmental contract. After that, that has to be one which is valid. We have to make sure that if all the requirements are in place, that the intergovernmental contract is valid, and then we have to sign an interministerial memorandum of understanding. So these are the two requisites. We work on them. If the partner is flexible and quick, We can do it within weeks. My team is extremely energized and very quick. So I'm very proud to say that we do all of these technicalities quite quickly after the political decision has been born. Once the MOU is signed, that means that then the partner country is ready to send applicants, which is done through a internet-based program on the web. They apply, then we make sure that they are technically eligible, send the list back to the sending country, to the ministry that we have signed the memorandum of understanding with. They make a short list because they are sometimes 5 or 10 or 100-fold applicants. So they make a short list, and then these students have to go through examinations in the different, there are currently 29 partners universities or higher education institutions in Hungary. They go through the examination processes, and then according to the quotas, we count down the ones, the actual number of quotas that we have available for that year, and then we send out the information for the students. They get ready with the visas and everything, and then we welcome them with wonderful welcoming events in all universities in September, making sure with our mentors that they can accommodate themselves, not only making sure that everything which is important for their studies is ready, but then everything which is important for their daily lives is ready. So their accommodation, they show them where to shop for food, where to get acquainted with other people, and just to have them a smooth transition into their daily lives.
Thank you. So let's introduce the third program, Reboot Your Roots. That is the slogan of the Hungarian Diaspora Scholarship launching this year. Cultivating Hungarian nationality outside of the borders of Hungary has always been crucial in terms of Hungarian foreign policy. The program is aimed to support members of the Hungarian diaspora coming outside of the European Union to come and study in Hungary while strengthening their Hungarian roots. 2021 is the very first year of the Diaspora Scholarship. State Secretary, could you introduce the scholarship? How long did it take to establish and launch such a big-scale project?
Well, Reka, I think that you have already outlined the most important factors about the program, so thank you for that. It was, again, a very high-level decision that we rendered possible for young people around the world that have a Hungarian feeling, whether it's a justified Hungarian root or a tradition or a lost relative, which is sometimes difficult to prove the Hungarian origins. But anyways, we want to gather the people who feel that they are Hungarian and give them a choice to come and study in Hungary to strengthen their identity. This is, I think, all about roots and identity. If somebody deems it important to reboot or revitalize their traditions, their roots, their heritage, then I think it's a great opportunity for them to come to Hungary, study here, get a wider knowledge about our country. And then if they decide to stay here, that's wonderful. If they decide to go back to their home country, then they can strengthen the Hungarian diaspora life there and the Hungarian community in that given country. So it serves the benefits of that country and Hungary, but definitely the Hungarian communities all over the world.
And what was the response from other countries and communities? Did these countries and communities welcome this scholarship initiative?
Oh, absolutely. We had a very positive feedback. And again, I think it's hard times because launching brand new programs without personally being able to present what we are selling as a product, it's quite difficult. So I consider it humbly a success that even though these conditions prevail and we have to do everything online, a lot of people are interested, and I just hope that as the program starts and people will come to Hungary in September within the diaspora program and start studying, then they will spread the news to their friends and it will spread through that. But if you were mentioning the Hungarian communities in different countries, we could not do this whole thing without them. So we need their help in terms of spreading the information and also to validate the people who will become part of it, because there has to be some kind of a validation or verification that, as I say, the feeling is somehow justified. We did have, for example, I don't want to mention the country in the Middle East that show up, that just showed up like 50 people with 50 people of Hungarian roots, which then we figured out that they never really had Hungarian roots, but they really wanted to become Hungarian because they thought this is a great opportunity to study in the heart of Europe. So we have to make sure that we really give the opportunity and the possibility to those who are eligible. So that's why these communities, and obviously the Hungarian missions abroad, the consulates, the honorary consuls, and the embassies have a huge task in verifying or justifying the reality of these demands.
So after having discussed the programs, now we'll move to the last section of questions. I'm sure you came across the term glass ceiling. Do you consider it to be a significant problem in Hungary? Have you ever encountered difficulties in your professional career given the fact that you are a woman?
I was waiting for the question. I think that in terms of women empowerment, Hungary has improved a whole lot in the last decade. I think the most important is that, and this is absolutely the success of the current government, that we give choices for women. So if you ask me whether I have seen any differences, well, I don't know, because I've never been a man fighting for my position or to advance, so I can only say how it was giving birth to three children, staying home while my male colleagues were proceeding with their career, so I had to reintegrate afterwards to the labor market or come back to the ministry. I felt that I had to work doubly hard to prove myself, and I'm very happy and I'm very lucky that I had a support system. The family support system is very important for women to reintegrate into the labor market. But the government's measures to make sure that the support system with the institutions, with all kinds of incentives, is also extremely important to, as I said, give choices to women. If they want to go back to work after having children, that they have all the opportunities with all kinds of incentives for the employee as well as the employer when she wants to reintegrate. Also not letting out or not forgetting the fathers, which are at home with all kinds of benefits for them. Or on the other hand, if somebody wants to stay home and become a full-time mother, there are also many incentives and benefits for them, financial also and institutional, to provide a safety net or a support system for them to make sure that they want to that they can fulfill their lives as they wish. If they want to stay home with children, that's going to be just as vulnerable that if they want to pursue a career. If somebody wants to do both, so have children and have a job or pursue a career, that's again a different situation. And I think every life story is different. I have to say that I was very lucky that I have a very strong support system from my family, and I must admit that I probably couldn't do it without them. So
yes, young girls, I think that we really appreciate this answer. So from your interview with Képmás magazine last year and also from this podcast, we could see that you have accomplished many girls' dreams, having an outstanding career and a loving family by your side. What is the key? How do you find balance?
Oh, well, with God's help, first of all. Second, I think it's a work in progress. Every day is a new beginning, a new possibility, a new opportunity to fight and to prove that you can achieve success and you can make a change for the better. And about balance, well, I think I stopped searching for balance. I'm just happy when it happens that I find it.
Thank you for the answer. And so the next question is, what was the most memorable moment of your career?
Well, my career started a long time ago. I think that I always appreciated that if I got an opportunity to prove that I can do something. So that means that every little task that I could fulfill was a success. it's very difficult to name one thing or another. Obviously, I was lucky enough to, for example, serve in a foreign mission. I was in New York, which was extremely effective in terms of learning in the multilateral environment. I could take part in the Millennium Assembly in 2020 with our wonderful President Madel, which was extremely interesting experience. I worked for regional affairs for the Visegrad Group, which at that time was a success itself, that we survived. So the cooperation didn't go down the drain. I had the privilege to work for Minister Martonyi, which was also a wonderful stepping stone. Then I went for my foreign mission. And obviously, after having my children, I didn't go back to the ministry right away, but I went to work for a foundation, which opened up a whole new spectrum of civil society and NGOs and civil world. So that was, again, I think, an important step of being well-rounded or well-educated in this field. Then I went back to the Ministry of Human Capacities, which is an enormous ministry, and I covered international relations in that ministry, which is culture, education, healthcare, social affairs. So to be responsible for the international dimension of all these and many more was, again, I think, a huge learning curve. I worked for the minister at that time also as chief of cabinet. So in that area of responsibility, again, I always consider these things a responsibility, but also an opportunity to learn and to just better myself and to make sure that I can advance in my knowledge. And right now, working for Minister Sijjártó is a great honor. I think his work ethics, his morals, the way he looks at work in an extremely diligent way, very humbly serving his nation. I think he's a real role model, and I'm just very happy to have the possibility to work in his team.
So we can say that there were many memorable moments or many things that you are...
Yeah, it's really hard to just pick one moment from this super colorful career.
Yeah, go through the etapes of the stages, of my career. But I think, and if you are looking for advice for students that are pursuing their studies now, and or just thinking about going to diplomacy or foreign relations or any kind of job, I think which you have to consider a career, I think you have to look at it every day. I think it's not a good strategy to look for big steps or big things to happen. If you wake up every day with trying to achieve whatever is ahead of you and try to find happiness and success and giving your 100%, then I think it'll add up and make you a happy diplomat.
All right, so our last question is related to the Hungarian Revolution and the War of Independence, since it is just around the corner. And we would like to end our interview with the topic of nationality. So what does this national celebration mean to you?
Well, it has it has many factors, because obviously I'm part of a nation, a freedom-loving nation, which celebrates in every springtime the meaning of freedom, of loyalty, of heroism, of self-sacrifice. I also have a personal touch because my great-great-grandfather was working for General Bem and was a friend of Petőfi. So I think it's just a wonderful, positively meant twist of fate that I get the possibility that I work in a beautiful office and I'm looking out of the window and I'm looking at General Bem at Bem Square, the general who was working together with my great-great-grandfather. And I just want to add to this personal touch that I've mentioned, that when we're celebrating or we're commemorating the revolution and the freedom fights of 1848 and 49, we're thinking about the heroes that have died for our country. But it gives us justification, with all that I've said before, to celebrate the people who currently sacrifice for this country, who live in a way that where they keep Hungary's national interests in their sight and as their mission, and for the people who work for Hungary every day. So I think if you want to draw an analogy for why is it important for us, obviously keeping the traditions and being familiar with what happens and going back to the roots of why it was a life turning point for the nation itself, which modern Hungary was built on later on, is again we're going down to the love of freedom of this nation. Again, I want to reiterate that we celebrate and we honor the heroes who have sacrificed their lives at that time for it. But we also have to celebrate and honor the people who give their lives working for the nation today too.
Yeah, it is really sorry that this year we cannot celebrate this national holiday together.
We can do it in our hearts. I think we
do. Yeah, exactly what I was wanting to say, that freedom is in everybody's hearts and this occasion is in everybody's hearts. This was the end of our interview with Dr. Pacsay Tomas és Orsolya. We would like to thank her again for accepting our invitation, and I'm sure that this podcast interview is really useful for international relations students who would like to later serve Hungary. Thank you for listening.